From the Mirror of Zen by Zen Master Sosan. The 18th chapter. Correct meditation practice is much like tuning the strings of an old lute. Find the right chord between too tight and too loose, and beautiful music can appear. But overexertion makes you prone to all kinds of attachment, while negligent, inattentive practice leads only to deeper ignorance. It is best to practice Zen with a calm and clear mind, constantly attentive and not moving. Commentary. Any lute player can tell you that the strings of a harp must be properly tuned, neither too tight nor too loose, in order to make beautiful music. Practicing meditation follows the same principle. Impetuous practice makes you overstimulated and distempered, while slackened practice leaves you dulled and vague, and leads you right into the cave of demons. When your practice is neither too slow or too fast, you will find the mysteriously subtle balance in it. So overexertion makes you prone to all kinds of attachment, while negligent, inattentive practice leads only to deeper ignorance. I'm also noticing the connection with the chant, the guidepost for silent illumination, Hong Zhe's piece. Some of the lines toward the end, responding, all objects certify it, everyone in dialogue, dialoguing and certifying, they respond appropriately to each other. But if illumination neglects serenity, aggressiveness appears. Certifying and dialoguing, they respond to each other appropriately. But if serenity neglects illumination, murkiness leads to wasted dharma. We made the effort to get here tonight, all of us, on this rainy November day, came out to sit together. This is a way of tuning the lute, tightening the string a tiny bit, where we may have just wanted to have a beer and watch Netflix or whatever it may be, our way of just relaxing in the evening. We chose to come here, and that is a different choice. We chose to be present with one another, practicing this Dharma together. Because on some level, I suppose, we all feel the mystery and power of practicing with others. And so in this way, we come together and make this music. And we are also invited to practice at home, on our own. And of course, this can be it depends on the person. But this can, for some people, be more of a challenge. It can feel easier sometimes to show up for a group. The kind of joy and power that it has to sit with other people, to chant with other people, all voices as one, to walk, stepping together, invites us into the moment. In this kind of communion that we share. The beauty of bowing, the kind of power, magnifying power of practicing with others, knowing that everybody in the room is really heightened, at a place of heightened attention, draws us into that same practice. We know that, you know, if I forget to bow to my cushion and then turn around and bow out to the room, other people will notice. We're like, oh, shoot. So there's some way, not that we're judging each other, of course, but there is some way that we realize that our practice has an effect on other people. That if I sit here and scratch myself and move around and stretch my legs out and all kinds of things, that I am actually distracting you from your practice. That when I sit still and upright, I am supporting your practice. And it's motivating and inspiring. And to know that all of you are doing the same in part for me, for each other, to support each other's practice. This is how our community is built, through this mutual support of one another, knowing that our own actions actually have an impact. They can either intensify or in some way diminish one another's practice. And so there's this kind of mirror quality. And our own practice is magnified. We feel it all around us, in one another, not just in ourselves. We feel our own practice in everyone. Such a beautiful thing to share. When we're at home and we're alone, we lack all those things that strengthen our own practice. And it can be harder. It can be harder to get ourselves to sit down in the first place. You know, oh, I got so much going on, and before you know it, the whole day's gone by, and you're tired, and you just want to go to bed, and it's 11:36, and what should I do? To heck with that, I'll just go to sleep tonight, you know. And before you know it, just day after day like that, neglecting practice, and the only place that practice happens is with the Sangha. And of course, this is one form, we might say, of too loose. Not really any practice at all. You know, sometimes we'll use the Dharma as an excuse not to practice the Dharma. We'll say, oh, everything is it anyway, so who cares? But we are here to awaken and to save all beings. And this awakening to our true nature. Now, our true nature is our true nature. It's true, regardless. It doesn't matter if we realize it, in the sense that it doesn't change the fact that it is our true nature. That we are boundless and empty and free. But I'll tell you what, life doesn't feel like that all the time, does it? We practice to realize the truth that we may also share this with all beings. Not in some proselytizing sense, that's not what I mean, but through our life and through our actions, through our engagement with the world, saving all beings moment by moment, washing the dishes, saving all beings moment by moment, interacting with one another, a smile, a kind word, our attention fully given. We all know how hard that is to do. We all know how easily distracted and lost we are in this world. And that's why we come and practice and sit. So the excuses, the philosophical excuses, are lies that we tell ourselves. Oh, it doesn't really matter if I sit. There's a kind of practice that can happen on the cushion, too, that's a very sloppy, fatigued kind of Zen. Come and sit and, whatever. Whatever my mind does is fine. Well, of course, true. In the absolute sense, it's all empty. And Are we awake? On the flip side, there is Buddha's practice before he heard this conversation. And of course, this is such an important conversation that he hears. Think this is basically, according to some stories, these are basically the last words he hears from a human being before his enlightenment. What inspires him to practice differently? No, I take that back. He also hears, "Do you want some rice?" Very important, actually. And says yes. And then goes and sits under the Bodhi tree. Here he has been practicing tenaciously for 6 years, starving himself, grain of rice each day. I don't know each of your practices, but I think most of us are unlikely to fall on this end of the spectrum in terms of the string being too tight or too loose. But even though we may not be ascetics and we may not have denied ourselves too much in way of food or sustenance or sleep, even though we may only sit once a day, the quality of our practice might be too tight. We might be demanding that we have different content in our mind than we have. And this is the usual way that we practice with the string too tight. We sit down on the cushion, and rather than simply practicing being awake to whatever is here, we try to generate particular content, imagining that we need to change ourselves in order to be enlightened. And in this way, we clamp down on our practice. We clamp down on our minds. We try to stop thoughts. We try to stop painful thoughts. We try to shift the content in every way that we can. And in so doing, we tighten the string a little too tight. So each of us sensing into our own practice here together. And it's really quite a dance, isn't it? For me, it's not that there is one particular form of practice that I can always take. There are some times when I sit on the cushion and I just find myself, you know, sleepy and sort of dozing off and really murky practice. And in those moments, it's important for me to notice that that is what is happening. In a way, to be awake to the presence of sleepiness. To not just drift off into a slumber. On the flip side, if I find myself trying to control my experience, trying to control the content of what is present, a time to loosen the practice and just say, well, what is here? What is here is in its own way, for me, a helpful kind of corrective, just that curiosity. That little bit of curiosity of dropping in the koan. What is this? Just enough when I'm sleepy to re-engage. Oh yeah, sleepiness is here. It's not necessarily the label, right? It's the being aware of what is present. Noticing. Even though we may be able not be able to describe it in words and don't even want to try, that's fine. It's not about engaging the discursive, descriptive vocabulary, but about really noticing through our practice, through our bodies, through the presence of awareness itself, what is here. Similarly, when the string is too tight and I find myself trying to squish something out of existence. No. What is here? Oh, sadness. Oh, okay. Come show yourself to me. Just openly attentive. It's quite a subtle thing, isn't it? Finding our way to this balance. Again, not a fixed point, but noticing how our practice is moment after moment. And continuing not to tighten the string too much or have it be too loose. Allowing the music to play and really hearing it. The middle way. This bears, I think, certain kinds of fruit. It's a way of engaging life, not needing to push away what's here, not needing to control what's here all the time, right? But to be able to be awake to what is here, even to our own responses, reactions, that kind of openness. Openness to the presence of all beings, awake to the presence of all beings, able to respond accordingly, able to engage in the world accordingly. That's how we save all beings. This practice not something we only do for a particular mental state of our own, but a practice of being awake to the world. As we sit here together, awake to one another, not just caught up in our own little practice, but noticing, not looking around, right? But noticing our presence together, holding one another in our practice bigger than just ourselves. So I thought this was yet another lovely page in this book of these essential, central teachings in Buddhist sutras. Another one worth exploring. And so interesting, so many different places for us to think about what it means to practice in ways that are neither too tight nor too loose. Do we have a way to practice at home? Can we encourage ourselves to practice every day? Enough that the string is not too loose. Do we continue to engage with sanghas, our sangha? And as we actually practice, the quality of our engagement is very important. Thank you.